welcome in to today's episode of the Blanket Coverage Podcast. Today is Tuesday the 13th, and we are actually recording right now on a Tuesday, believe it or not. Last week, of course, we had a little bit of technical difficulty, but we are all about the NBA. We're going to talk about Jamal Murray's injury, how that affects the Nuggets. We're going to talk a little Mavs ball. I'm sure that Jack has plenty of Hawks talk. We're also going to get to our other sports roundup first. But to start off, Jack, how are we doing? How's it going?
We are doing pretty good today because today is another day where we get to talk about some solid sports that aren't always the regular sports, because now we're getting into that weird part of the year where it's I guess we can say mid-spring, even though it kind of feels like late spring, but technically mid-spring, as we now are about halfway through April. And as you know, in April, there are not too many big sports going on, as football's over, basketball ends. Okay, regular season NBA now, because I know normally April is into the season NBA and things get a little crazy. Now, I'm not saying that's too big of a sport. April's a pretty slow month for sports overall, but there's always one special moment that occurs in every April. And we're going to talk about this first, and that is the Masters, because this is one of the best parts of the sports season that comes in a little bit of a downtime. And it's always something fantastic to happen here. And in this one, we had Hideki Matsuyama. So I was close. So he is the first ever Japanese man to win a men's major championship with the 2021 Masters title. So not just the first Japanese man to win the Masters, but for any major championship title. So some really, really, really great honor for Japan there, and excellent for him to come in and win it. And he actually had a really good last day. It wasn't too much on top of the scores. It was actually at the Rangers game that day, so I missed to watch the end of the Masters.
I got to watch most of his round. I stopped after 12 because, I mean, if you even get out of 12 with a one over and you're in as big of a lead as he was in there, I think it was a four shot lead. If you make it out of 12 with a four shot lead, you're gonna win the Masters, buddy. So I actually didn't finish the round, but I got to watch the first part, and it was a great round. I mean, he was clinical. He did what he had to do, and he really got ahead of the field on moving day, when a lot of players were having a tough time that were up near the top of the leaderboard with Justin Rose. So really, really phenomenal two rounds for Hideki Matsuyama. A phenomenal tournament overall. Good to have the Masters back in April.
No, indeed. And I was really proud of a lot of the way this turned out. Happy to have it here. The one concerning part, though, this, which is kind of surprising, and I do know that he is recovering from injury, but Brooks, okay, how do you pronounce the last name? I don't watch enough golf. Koepka. First major cut since 2013 Open Championship. 24 straight majors made the cut. Missed it this time. I know he's recovering from injury.
One
still
month
pretty surprising.
Into a four-month recovery. But one still, month into a four-month knee surgery recovery, playing on one leg.
I'm only saying that it's amazing that he had 24 made straight. And to get to miss one, I know that it's kind of obvious why they missed one, but that's really incredible to make 24 straight cuts in a row. I would say there are not too many golfers who can say they've done that.
Yeah, well, Brooks doesn't practice either, so...
Up next, I sort of reorganized this section into just general college sports because we don't really have much college sports news besides really baseball is the one big one that is at least live. The rest of these, like basketball, football, will be, of course, off-season news. So we got some things in there, but we have a couple other mentioning things before we get into the TCU news. But all 47 matches of the NCAA volleyball tournament will be broadcasted and commented live on ESPN services. And this was actually kind of a controversial point because originally a lot of them actually were not being commentated. They were just going to have a camera just sit there and play for the first and second rounds. And then a lot of hell was raised about that because they said, why are you ignoring the first two rounds? And ESPN turned around and they said there will be commentators on that ready to go. So good for college volleyball for getting extended coverage. That tournament's always a very exciting one. And I don't think TCU made it. I know Georgia Tech did. I was keeping on that news. But I don't think TCU made that tournament. So we'll at least see what happens there. In FCS football, which, yes, there still is FCS football going on. We haven't really talked about it much, but they are still going. I'm very excited to cover the playoffs once we hit that. But Presbyterian senior, the Presbyterian Blue Hose, as their name is, a senior linebacker, Colby Campbell, set the new overall Division I record with 25 tackles in a game against Davidson. So a new D1 record here in the spring, which I think it's safe to say we probably are not going to be getting a spring D1 football record anytime soon again. So kind of neat to see this record break for Campbell here for Presbyterian. And some TCU news. Oh boy, it has been a week for TCU men's basketball, to say the least. In fact, there were so many other updates that this script I have here is outdated because we have so many other disasters for it. So isn't even correct yet, but we'll go through starting from the top. So TCU, and I have this up here. TCU basketball had a total of, I think it was 16 players on the roster last season. 16 players. Now, let me ask you, Dom, how many do you think graduated on that list of 16?
One.
And it was Owen Asheris, which again was the normal thing to happen. You lose one guy. And in fact, for TCU's sake, that's pretty good because losing only one guy is pretty much unheard of over this time. But then things got a little interesting because then RJ Nimhart declared for the draft, which is something that wasn't exactly new. I mean, it was pretty, that was fairly predictable. But then the silly season started. When after that ended, then we had a whole lot of players decide, well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and leave too. And that started off with who else? I mean, I'm not sure what the order is exactly, but Mickey Pearson announced he would be leaving after only really playing one season. He's still a freshman, technically, transferred in, and then he left. And so it wasn't a huge deal, but then we had Kevin Easley go. One of our starting guys on the bench was a solid forward for us, was a sophomore, 6'7", 225, only averaged about 4-4, so wasn't really huge for us. So again, I was like, all right, that's not too terrible. Deontay Smith also left through the year, so we didn't have him. Dylan Arnett announced he was leaving, who averaged 0 across the board, so wasn't particularly worried about him being gone. Then we had the hammer fall. Jaden Ledee announced he would be leaving, ranked 75th overall in the 2018 RSCI top 10, was a big guy at Ohio State, but didn't really do much there, came here and improved dramatically from last season. I, in my opinion, was my most improved player in the season, left, and I was like, uh-oh. Taron Todd quickly joined him, the Canadian guy from Findlay Prep, which if you remember Findlay Prep, it's also where PJ Fuller went to school, who is still sticking around. And so Taron Todd announced he would be leaving. He averaged 4-2-1 with us. So again, not huge numbers, but he was helpful off the bench. Francisco Farabella, while he is not announcing he's leaving, is having an issue with his heart. As I discussed throughout the season, it's still up in the air whether he plays. So for the sake of this, let's say he doesn't. Next up, we have Taron Frank. A quick to become fan favorite, actually, came off the bench and played really well, got 8 points in about 2 minutes in his first appearance for the Frogs. Incredibly exciting talent, really hyped to see him. And he's leaving as a true freshman, by the way. He's going to be gone, announced he was going into the transfer portal. And then you may think there's no way anybody else could leave. But then Kevin Samuel, for the second year in a row, decides that he's going to go off and go for the draft, which I love Kevin, but I saw the top comment on his Instagram post, his top comment was, better enroll in classes in the fall, Kevin. I'll see you then. So, and Kevin liked that, by the way. He liked that comment. So that tells you anything. Boy. So after all of that, the remaining players on the whole team from last season, Mike Miles, the breakout freshman, Chuck O'Bannon, an admittedly pretty solid junior transfer, PJ Fuller, who was a highly, highly, highly recruited player out of high school and did not live up to any of that his first two seasons, Eddie Lampkin, who played basically nothing for us and averaged half a point and a rebound, and Harrison Young, who doesn't have a scholarship. That's the roster.
Oh, no.
Four scholarship players. And again, this is assuming that Francisco does not play. It is still possible that he plays again. So I'm assuming that he doesn't. But with him out, and also assuming that RJ and Kevin are going to be gone, because again, just to remind you, they can come back. Their college eligibility is not over. So they can return. But that's still three more players for a total of eight, seven scholarship at the max. So,
Fire Jamie Dixon. Been saying it for a while. This is the second time this has happened in 3 years. Second time. How are you going to rebuild a program every 2 years? You're not.
We don't have a forward anymore. We don't have a forward. Got to be
done. Something's got to be done about Jamie Dixon because he loses the locker room every 2 years and then everyone leaves. What kind of program is that? What kind of program are we building here? It's a serious question.
I really don't know. I mean, it's becoming at this point deeply concerning is honestly not even a good way to start it because we don't have a front court. And I'm not saying that in a facetious or obnoxious way. I mean, we do not have a front. We have one player, a singular player that's left. And that's Eddie Lampkin, who played all but about, 20 minutes maybe on the whole season and was okay, but had a big problem controlling his body and getting used to that. And so for me, it's like, we sort of joked about panic mode, but like, I mean, I don't know. And again, we have added some players. You mentioned we got the Vanderbilt guy, Maxwell Evans, who I think actually is pretty solid. We also added UTA player Hotto Wells, who averaged 17 points per game last season for UTA. Last guy we got from UTA was Ed the Shooter, Edric Dennis Jr. From the 2019 and 2020 season, who was actually decent. I didn't have much of a problem with him. And yeah, this guy, again, 17 points per game in the Sun Belt, which proved after Georgia State having their big run is a decent conference, not a great one, but decent. And so we already have two solid guys in, but they're guards. We still don't have a forward at all on the entire roster. Zero. So it's like, and we had this
probably because they've seen what happened to every other forward that came to TCU since Kendrick
Williams. Remember that we had this conversation last year when I said we're losing. That was after Kendrick. We were losing JD. We were losing JD, and I was saying, what are we going to do now? And then the forwards that came in, we had Jaden Ladie, Kevin Easley, Taryn Frank, Mickey Pearson, Deontay Smith. And we knew that out of that group, it was unlikely Deontay was going to do anything. So when he left, I wasn't concerned at all. Mickey didn't really break out a lot, but again, he was deep on the bench. But I said, who cares? You have Jaden Ladie playing really well. You have Taryn Frank, who's breaking out big time and I was really excited about. And then even you have Kevin Easley, who apparently was a good shooter in practice, but could not really shoot in the court, but he did decent defense. And so I was saying, that's actually a pretty good forward core. But every single one is gone. Every single one is gone. And so I don't know what to do with this. I mean, it's seriously, it's gotten to the point where it's just sort of exhausting because I look at these players and I see where they're going and I just can't really comprehend it. And I'm really losing my patience on it because it depresses me that we had what 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 freshmen on the roster, which is three true freshmen, two transfers. Three of those five freshmen are gone. Three of the five. And all of them left after the season ended. None of them were injured. None of them transferred midseason. These were all three just left after the season ended. Sophomores, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sophomores. We lost four. The only one left is PJ. Four are gone. Yeah.
I don't see where you go from here, to be quite honest. It's a tough situation to be in as a school because you want to give the guy every opportunity you can. But at the same time, I mean, if you can't retain players, you can't build a program. I mean, what's the start of building a program is getting your guys in there and developing them while they're there. If you don't have the guys in your program, how are you going to develop them?
I don't really know. It makes it too difficult. And so it's just, I don't know. I'm at a loss, but all I know is that I'm very excited to see how the offseason will go. And by excited, I mean incredibly anxious, but I am very interested to see what they end up doing because at this point you just have to basically build your entire team again because the only player out of the ones that are left that I trust because Harrison Young's not going to play and PJ has left me no hope anymore. You have O'Bannon who's solid at a two. PJ who's decent too has played a one a little bit. Miles is pretty obviously going to be your starting point guard. The one guy I'm actually have full faith in. But is that Eddie getting your 40 minutes a game at center? I mean, Eddie cannot play 40 minutes at the center right now. He can't do that. And I mean, I love the guy, but you can't do that after playing what, like 2 minutes a game all season. Say, all right, you're going to play 40 now with no backup. I mean, we have to hunt for someone, because that's the one positive of all of this, is the transfer market is so massive this season, like 1,100 players massive, that we can get some guys in, I think. And we already have two guys in that I like them both. I think they both can actually be solid here. So I'm not extremely worried. I'm just mostly worried. So we'll see how it pans out. Next up in soccer, not too much here because we're revving up for the MLS to start this week, which I'm very, very excited about. With that, we have Real Madrid beating Barcelona for the third straight time for the first time in 43 years. So huge on that note. And then in baseball, our last note here, for the first time in San Diego Padres history, we have a no-hitter thrown. Joe Musgrove throws a 9-inning, 10-strikeout no-hitter. Only man on base at all in the game was Gallo, who was hit by a pitch. San Diego is actually the last franchise without a no-hitter game. And this is crazy. The last no-hitter was on September 13th, 2020 by Chicago Cubs' Alex Mills. And Victor Caratini was the same catcher at both games. So kind of crazy thing there. Yeah, the same pitcher, same catcher for both of the last two no-hitters that have occurred in the MLB. Dexter Fowler, their new transfer in at the LA Angels from the St. Louis Cardinals, is out for the season with a torn ACL. Horrible news there. I really like seeing him play. And given that his age is there, it may be near the end for Fowler. And then finally, in some Braves news, the Braves were absolutely robbed in the Philadelphia Phillies game. I don't know if you saw this play. It went viral on everything on Twitter. And it was Boehm, one of the Philadelphia Phillies runners, was driving into home base. Marcelo Zuna threw a two-hopper out from left field, bounced him. Our catcher got it. Travis Darno, wasn't blocking the plate, had the ball. Blocking the plate rule is off when you have the ball. Boehm was sliding into home. Foot was not on the ground, tagged, and the foot hopped over home base and planted down about 6 inches beyond it and was called safe. And again, with real time, it was a little tricky to call it. It's kind of 50-50. You look at the replay, five different angles, all of which showed that it was very, very obviously out. And they upheld the call. It was safe. Phillies took the go-ahead run and ended up winning. And so the Braves got pretty obviously very mad about it. Mike Trout himself tweeted so bad with a laughing emoji. Justin Turner, who I perennially hate for being on the Dodgers and beating us, he even said it was a joke and complained about it. Like, it sent the whole MLB in an uproar. And honestly, at this point, get rid of replay. Because if you're going to have replay and not use it on something that's that obvious and something that's so clearly to everyone, even Phillies fans who are just, you know, Philadelphia fans are always Philadelphia fans. But even they were sitting there saying, this is an awful call. They were like, we'll take it, but it's an awful call. And so, yeah, it's one of those things where it's saying, if you're going to have replay, you have to use replay. You can't just have it just for the sake of having it. And so I think it's terrible. I don't understand what the point of it was, but it was very frustrating. Even though it's a regular season game in April, I know, but it's still frustrating.
Gotta love the MLB.
Yes, I mean, I know we have awful refs and everything, but that was really bad. Speaking of awful refs, on to the NBA. We got some top stories coming up here, and Noah, can you take us through it on what has been going on over the last couple weeks?
Absolutely. So I got to sit down and watch the Nuggets Warriors game last night, which was notable for multiple reasons.
Pain.
Yeah, we'll get the bad news out of the way first. Jamal Murray, in the last minute of the game, in the last 60 seconds of the game, went up for a layup and landed on that knee. And honestly, he really it when he took off. If you go back and watch it, it's kind of a tough watch if you're squeamish with sports injuries, but I've seen my fair share. So I was able to watch it, and it did not look good on the spot. He was obviously in a lot of pain. And obviously our thoughts are with him, and we hope he makes a full and quick recovery because he's one of the most exciting young players in the league. But the Nuggets might be screwed here. And I honestly think so, because if you look at their basketball reference page, if you look at off and on and off with Jamal Murray on and off the court, they have more turnovers a lower offense and more turnovers by like two or three a game. More turnovers, lower offensive rating, higher pace, which I would add is not necessarily a good thing for them, having Nikola Jokic as kind of their facilitator on that team. He's not exactly getting up and down the floor super quick. So whether Jokic can orchestrate that pace in a way that's efficient and quick, that remains to be seen. But I just think that doesn't necessarily play well for them if they're playing at a higher pace. They're worth pretty much all over the court without Jamal Murray, because you're taking a scorer, primary ball handler, and replacing them with Monte Morris. And I don't think Torrey Craig is on the team anymore. I got to take a look at their roster one more time. It gets a little confusing. All the players, all the names. But yeah, they don't have another good ball handler on that team. They already traded away Gary Harris. They might be a little screwed in the front court. Campazzo is not the guy for them.
Yeah, it's very clear that
Will
Murray
Barton, who I was forgetting. Sorry, totally interrupted you.
No, you're not. I remember him being on it. I only remember the Nuggets roster because of my my 2K my player for when I bothered with the 2K my career before I got too angry at it. I was drafted by the Nuggets, so I weirdly know a lot of the Nuggets roster. But yeah, it's very obvious losing him is going to be massive. Of course, we've talked about how Jokic is going to be the big guy for the MVP race. But it's still, you can't have that second star out. And we talked a lot about the NBA with its duos over the last few years, and you really can't have that partner out and expect to be really, really huge going into the postseason, especially in a West that is just so competitive and so strong. And you have to fight tooth and nail to win basically everything. And that's really, really difficult. And I mean, speaking of that, we see games like the Wizards and the Jazz, where Russell Westbrook puts up another triple-double. And this time they actually come in with a win, Donovan Mitchell dropping 42 and still losing, which, yeah, how about the 20-33 Wizards beating the 40-14 Jazz on the road? Because flukes happen.
it was an off game for the Jazz, obviously, but they almost came back. I mean, they almost came back from being down double digits.
It's impressive.
With a few minutes left to go there. I did want to return quickly to the Nuggets as we're talking about sort of the shape of the West. Because the Nuggets won 8 in a row. We talked about it last week, how they were absolutely humming. And now not so much so without Jamal Murray. But they were up to 4th in the West. But now we see with AD starting to come back for the Lakers, with Norman Powell joining the Blazers. I mean, Denver could fall into the play-in conversation, which I would argue is not a great thing for them, because in any one game situation, I mean, you can beat the Denver Nuggets, as we saw last night with the Golden State Warriors. Steph Curry passing over 60-year-old record, breaking Wilt Chamberlain's scoring record for the Golden State Warriors, and putting up an egregious amount of points in the process. I mean, goodness gracious, what a night for Steph Curry. What are your thoughts on the game, that matchup overall, the game, Steph Curry, the record, anything?
Well, if we had any question about who is the greatest modern era Warrior, I think that has pretty much been put to bed, that it is Steph Curry. When you think of the Warriors, it is Steph Curry now. And it kind of has been for a while. And I personally like Steph. I know, like, besides just loving basketball, loving Steph, I personally am a Steph fan. I've always enjoyed watching him play. I love watching his basketball. And then I saw an interesting comment that was saying who is big, more impactful for the game. Not necessarily who's better, but who is more impactful on the game basketball, whether it's Wilt Chamberlain or Steph Curry. And it is kind of interesting to think about, because you have both these players being about as different as you could possibly put two players up. I mean, you have a giant player who played in a league where everything was 2 points, no 3-point line for even a decade. I mean, 3-point line came, 1987, like late 80s. So was way before that time period at all. And then you have Steph Curry, who basically revolutionized what it meant to be a point guard or a shooting guard, like how you shoot threes, how many threes you shoot, any of that in the 3-point game completely changed that. And so on those two guys, it's really difficult to sort of say. And so I don't really know, because again, to me, I've always thought it's comparing apples and oranges. I very much dislike to compare players across different eras very seriously, because I just feel like it gets way too ticky-tacky and you just can't really compare. Or you then get into really specific things of like, well, what was their bodybuilding like or nutrition? And then it gets silly.
Well,
you can't compare.
I hate open-ended questions like that, because they completely forget to like define like the game. Like, what does the game mean? Obviously, when Wilt Chamberlain played, basketball was not even as ubiquitous as hockey is now. I mean, it was not a major, major American sport until the 80s. So when you're talking about Steph Curry, who came up in the age of social media and having all these viral plays and being such a popular player among our society and among basketball culture in general. What you were saying about comparing apples to oranges absolutely goes for this, and it absolutely makes sense. 53 for Steph was the number, by the way. I wanted to make sure it was right before I just threw it out there, but it was 53 points last night. And that's with hardly playing in the fourth quarter. I mean, he had a 19-point first quarter and an 18-point third quarter. So obviously a very, very special night for Steph Curry. But I want to talk about, and I guess I'll replace this. Instead of doing this later, I'll do this now. I want to talk about the Dallas Mavericks, because the Mavs have found themselves in the play-in, sort of the 6-10 range. They've found themselves in the play-in range. Now with the Nuggets falling back a little bit, presumably, that opens it up for some of these teams who are in the play-in race to really take things up a notch. But I don't know if it's going to be the Mavs. I mean, how much Mavs basketball have you gotten to watch this year?
Not a lot, though. I am actually trying to go to the Mavericks Pistons game with a friend next week. I think we're going to end up going to that. And you may ask, why in the world would I want to see the godforsaken Pistons? And the answer is because it's cheap. And the other option is back-to-back Lakers without LeBron and AD, which is $150 without LeBron or AD, which that's what we like to call robbery, ladies and gentlemen. That is robbery. So I prefer not to get robbed, so I'm not going to do that. But I may end up going to see them anyway. But they've been a very bizarre team this year, because I know we've talked about it a lot, about how the Mavericks have tried to come in with Luka and were, I mean, I can admit to that. I thought Luka would be an MVP candidate, if not the winner of it, which ended up being not true. But and I get they had to play the buzzsaw of the 76ers in their last game, which really did not go very well for them. But it's just been a confusing season for a lot of the Mavericks. 29-24, 13-12 at home. It's just been kind of bizarre, to say the least. And I don't really know where to put this Mavericks team, especially when you compare them to last season's team. I get it was the weird bubble year, but I mean, they're still the seventh seed. They're still cleanly in the playoffs. They're up a game and a half on Memphis. Like, they're not in a bad spot by any means.
And I don't know why, and maybe they were, and we just don't know about it. Maybe it's a well-kept secret. I don't know why this team wasn't more active at the trade deadline. And I get it was probably had something to do with the fact that they traded two firsts for Kristaps Porzingis. And I believe it's the Steven rule that dictates you can't trade first round picks in back-to-back seasons. So maybe that had a little something to do with it. But I think the Mavs should absolutely be buyers right now. Why? Because you can't trust this team with Kristaps Porzingis off the court. Kristaps Porzingis is what takes this team from a play-in contender to a Western Conference Finals contender. But they've played more minutes on the court without Kristaps this season than they've played with Kristaps Porzingis this season. And they're clearly worse on offense. Luka has the highest usage rate in the league. I believe it's like a 35 usage rate, which is absurd. And for a guy that dishes the ball as much as Luka does, he can't have that burden fall on only him. He needs a running mate. He needs another guy who can score, and more importantly, who can stay on the court. Because that's Porzingis' problem, is that he can't stay on the court. And even when he's healthy, he's taking rest days and they're doing load management. And maybe they're just trying to get to the playoffs. Maybe this is, you know, they've been injured quite a bit this year. They lost Dwight Powell early in the year. Maybe this is just them trying to skate by and get into the playoffs and then see what they can do in the playoffs. But I'm not sure that you can trust Porzingis to be around for one entire playoff series. And I'm really not sure that they won that trade with the Knicks, having given up two first-round picks for him.
And that's what makes it interesting, looking at how this team sort of plays
and
themselves
Dennis
out.
Smith Jr., by the way.
It's going to be where do they really want to be in the playoffs? Where do they really want to situate themselves? And to me, I see them from last season, and yeah, I'd be pretty disappointed with just sort of showing up to the playoffs and then leaving, like, after the way they performed last season. I wouldn't want to just show up in the playoffs and leave. And I know it's not just like every team. Of course, every team wants to win. But at the end of the day, if we're looking at who are the elite teams right now, you see the Jazz and the West alone. The Jazz are elite. The Suns are elite. You have the Clippers being elite. The Nuggets, I guess, almost were elite, if you want to say, without Murray. I mean, they're not like
a
lot,
but
like
Suns
you lose
category.
A little bit.
I think the Suns are elite.
Oh, I said them.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear that. Most 3-pointers in a quarter in NBA history last night for the Suns in the third quarter against the Rockets. The Rockets still almost came back and won that.
Did they end up finishing with?
I don't have the exact number, but I do have the page up, so I should be able to find this pretty easily.
Well, because I'm saying that, because I think I may not have mentioned that, but the Hawks ended up getting, I think that's in our next section, as I wanted to mention a little bit about
25 3-pointers.
My Hawks here
in a quarter. Also a franchise. Oh, wait, sorry. That's
25 in a quarter.
Wrong. That's 11 3-pointer, 12 3-pointers in a quarter. I can't read. 12 3-pointers in a quarter. They also had a franchise record 25 made 3-pointers last night. And we talked about it last week. We talked about how good the Suns have been. And I guess this could be a good transition. I know we'll have a few things to talk about on the back end, but this is probably a good transition to stock up, stock down, and then we'll get to role players.
Well, I did want to mention too, Chris Paul actually passed Scottie Pippen in the all-time steals leaderboard as well, right behind Stockton, Kidd, MJ, Gary Payton, and Maurice Cheeks are the top five. So Chris Paul getting into top six here. But I was going to mention defender. About the Hawks at least, because I didn't get to say my little Hawks section yet. But the one I did want to mention, that Zach LaVine, 50 piece, 31 in the first half. Bulls cannot beat the Hawks even with the 50 piece, which is mind-blowing to me. And the next Hawks game was up against the Charlotte Hornets. Now, mind you, that was with Solomon Hill and Brandon Godwin starting, which I doubt you even have heard many things about Brandon Godwin of these players, but
good one.
Well, then I guess you have, but I also can't pronounce anything, as you know, but those guys are pretty deep bench players in the Hawks. No Trey, no JC, no Hunter, no Reddish, no Snell, no Gallo, no Dunn, who I'm still on the fence of Chris Dunn still exists or not. I'm convinced he doesn't exist. But with those guys gone, and I know there was no Gordon Hayward or LaMelo Ball, but how in the world did the Hawks beat the Hornets in that game? Because we were down by 12 with 6 minutes left with our seven, arguably not the seven best players because Clint played, but seven of the better players in the Hawks were all out and yet still found a way to win on the road. And I know it was against the Hornets, but the Hornets are pretty, I mean, what they're like, they're still a playoff team right now. So that's the thing about this Hawks team that I'm so giddy about, is that those two games are perfect examples of how much this team has improved. Because last season, we would have lost both those games by 15, no question. And it's amazing to me how much more improved that this Hawks team has become to be a team that's genuinely pretty solid. And I think I even saw that defensive rating wise, Trae Young had improved dramatically as well, was a much better defender than he was before. And so that's just a thing that I've really, really liked about this team, is they're finally performing better. They're acting better. This is just a very solid playoff team. And I didn't think they'd be four right now. That was a little bold, but I was very confident they would make the playoffs. And I'm very happy to see how Atlanta's really, really shaped themselves up to be an incredibly hot team with still the most cap space, I think, at least if not one of the top few teams. But being the four seed in the East with one of the top cap spaces in the entire league, ugh, I am just thrilled. Great position to be in for the Hawks right now.
Absolutely. Well, let's get to stock up, stock down before we get to role player of the week. And I'll go first because I already talked about both of these teams. But my stock up is the Suns for reasons that we really talked about last week. I love the three-point shooting. I love the way they're competing. But it's an interesting hypothetical to wonder what would have happened if they would have taken Luka instead of DeAndre Ayton and where they would be right now. But Chris Paul will certainly suffice for the time being. They're my stock up. I'm really buying them. And then I'm selling the Mavericks. I can't trust Porzingis to stay on the court. Luka has the ball too much. And I say that also knowing that Luka is one of the most dominant offensive players in the league, probably top five, definitely top 10. But you just can't have the ball that much, especially when the rest of your team sucks as much as the Mavs do. So that's my two cents there.
Well, I went ahead and went with Kyrie Irving's biggest nightmare, which that dame is Dennis Schroeder for the LA Lakers. I wanted to mention that about Kyrie, who had to take a personal day, couldn't go to the game after all that, which I think is because he was mad about my guy Dennis here. But yeah, he's been playing pretty solidly, led the Lakers in scoring with 21 points against the Knicks in the loss, which is, wow, we lost to the Knicks, and then beat Brooklyn with 19 points. Been consistently getting double digits here and pretty much a big, weird issue in the fact the Lakers obviously don't have either of LeBron James or Anthony Davis, which if you tend to be a very strong, very, very top heavy team and you don't have those two guys in, you tend to not be as good. And again, the Lakers are obviously not bad, but it's very clear the Lakers are not the number one team in the West by any stretch without those guys in. Though still 33-21, still a very solid record. So with that, guys like Dennis are going to have to step up for this team to be very solid because again, their bench is sort of filled with a lot of kind of role player guys. And they're up next, I think, are against the Charlotte Hornets. So that should be a very interesting game. So I'm excited to see how that goes. But I'm looking at for my stock up, stock down kind of teams, just to mention that. For here, I have the Knicks as one of my stock up teams and the Kings as one of my going down looking to sell. And the reason why I'm liking the Knicks here is because they're a team that has obviously been the blunt of everyone's joke, which makes sense because it's been, oh, it's the damn Knicks, but they're actually kind of getting it together. I know we talked a lot about it this season so far, but, and they've slipped a little bit, but they're right back in form, three wins in a row for New York. They're 28-27 above 500 and they only trail the Celtics by half a game and the Hornets by half a game. You win one game, the Knicks propel themselves up to sixth, almost at fifth. They're only a game and a half behind the Heat. Only one full game behind, game and a half behind Atlanta at the four spot. But that's a game and a half separating them from fourth to eighth. The Knicks really could make a serious run here, and I'm very impressed with what I've seen out of the New York team that's really struggled. They're 2-8 in their own division, despite having a winning record overall. So, yeah, it's been a weird time for the New York Knicks, especially in a very solid against the Western Conference, too. They've had a very good Western Conference record. But winning in their last three is really, really big for this team. That's really trying to make a playoff push. As crazy as that sounds, Knicks in the playoffs, it's seriously very possible with teams like the Magic dropping a lot, with teams like the Raptors dropping. And with the play-in series right now, it's the Pacers and the Bulls are your last two teams then. And I'd be very interested to see that. That would be Celtics versus Bulls, Knicks versus Pacers if the playoffs started right now. So interesting stuff going on, which side note on that too, it is actually mentioned that it's been a little bit of a hot water topic. Apparently, I know Luka Doncic and Mark Cuban came out and actively opposed the play-in tournament in the playoffs, which is kind of funny considering Mark Cuban actively voted for it to happen, but yet still is trying to say he hates it now. But interesting to see these players and owners being very anti this new playoff system we're going to see this summer. So interesting to see it at least. Just some thoughts on players being a little not happy about that.
Yeah, well, I understand where they're coming from about not letting bad teams in the playoffs. But the fact of the matter is we already have bad teams in the playoffs every year. Why not add a little fun into it? If the Orlando Magic can make the playoffs last year, so many teams should make the playoffs this year. And that's why we have 20 playoff teams. Did want to quickly mention, we skipped my role player of the week, but I had Scary Terry. Terry Rozier played in all 50 games, averaging 20 a game. Charlotte is still in the playoff hunt, even without LaMelo Ball. So shout out Scary Terry. And I believe that will do it for this episode of the Blanket Coverage Podcast. Make sure you check us out this week as we dive into some more exit interviews, which will be coming. We are going to get all of them out before draft, which is coming up at the end of the month here. So pretty excited to do those. But until then, from Fort Worth, I am Noah Parker.
And I'm Jack Wallace. Peace out, y'all.